It's really good to have the support of your fellow workers in everything you do. Really appreciate it. But Scott LeBlanc. Well, Sally and I have been asked to talk a little bit about arming producers, you all as seed stock producers, your commercial producers with tools to further advance in the future. I think we've heard some really good presentations already this morning about what's happening in the industry and change that we're going to be encountering. And I think, again, we look at our industry, and I mean, we've got a very large, very diverse industry. As Dr. Purcell mentioned, we've lost about 13 million beef cows and some 400,000 operations over the past several years, but we still see a tremendous industry with a lot of diversification. And so the challenge is, whether you're working on a performance program, a national ID program, or any type of endeavors, is really trying to address programs and develop programs that meet the diverse membership that we have as well, which our membership would follow these breakdowns very closely that we see in the industry as far as percentage of producers that kind of fall into these general categories. Chuck indicated in his initial comments this morning, it's never been a better time to be an Angus producer, to be an Angus fieldman. And we certainly have got a lot of things to be excited about. Angus cattle from last year's livestock publication numbers would represent about 40% of the beef cattle registrations in this country. You combine the next six breeds in the country today to equal those same numbers that you all as Angus breeders have registered. And so it does point to the influence of Angus cattle, the industry, and the influence of those genetics across the industry. The performance programs database, I mean, the breeders who had the insight to start those programs back in the late 50s, and as we've seen that grow and develop, last year we had a little over 8,000 individual members that contributed to the AHIR database. We have a pedigree database of over 14.5 million pedigrees, some 12.5 million measurements in performance records, and you all are to be commended for contributing to that information, contributing to that data, and creating real value that is I think a lot of times overlooked, just how great that is. I mean, this is information from the sire evaluation report that, I mean, shows that we're generating right now some 5 million weaning weight EPDs, for example, on over a little over 4 million weaning records. And again, it's a tremendous competitive advantage within the industry to have this data and this information available for you all as producers to use as tools. Technology has readily been applied by Angus breeders in improving the genetics that they are putting out in the industry. The early 70s, the OpenAI rule, I think, has to be looked upon as one of the most influential decisions that was ever made by this association that allowed a producer, no matter what size, to utilize some of the best genetics in the industry. That 46% AI last year of the registrations were, again, a new record, and that represents a tremendous advantage in tying together the database and really creating some exciting tools with that information. Likewise, things like embryo transplant that last year represented 9% of our total registrations would be a tremendous set of cattle that have tremendous impact, again, on our entire industry. I think the progressive steps that have been made to try to incorporate some of that performance information into genetic predictions and useful tools as well has really been something that has set the Angus breed apart from some of the other industry. just like our database has evolved and grown, we've seen a tremendous evolution in the tools that are put out there for you all as producers and for your customers as producers. I mean, dating back to the first opportunities to measure just average daily gain and within herd ratios, sending bulls to performance tests that around the country to evaluate their potential feedlot performance against other competition. Development of estimating breeding values, of course, EPDs are the tools that we've been used to using now, and now really going into a new generation of genetic selection tools, those that we call bioeconomic indexes.
And sometimes in the popular press, you may hear these values referred to as economically relevant traits, but the key is that we really felt it was important to begin to express things in usable measures in terms of talking about dollars and not so much talking about inputs and our EPDs alone, but to bring those to a new generation of bioeconomic relevance. Right now, with respect to the list of EPDs, you'd be amazed how many times we get asked, how many EPDs do you all have? Well, we're knocking on the door at 20 right now. And with the index revolution, I think, that's occurring in the beef industry, which it has a tremendous amount of history in animal agriculture when you look at dairy and swine. But the nice part about indexes is that they put us on a multi-trait playing field, adding a lot of simplicity and convenience to commercial bull buyers tying together a laundry list of EPDs and making a directional change with an economic twist. Whoa, one too far. I just want to get us along the mindsets of thinking about these dollar values. And traditionally with EPDs, we were thinking about outputs and pounds and revenue. And now we're going to make some expense adjustments, associate costs, and realize the potential along those lines. And probably one of the best examples would be what we talk about in terms of carcass merit. It's quite a juggling act for you and your clientele to not only monitor carcass size, hit a reasonable window, balancing quality grade and red meat yield, and tying in appropriate fatness for a target endpoint is a classic example of where indexes have a tremendous amount of relevance. There being the key point where we like to start with an easy one and with our dollar values, dollar F, G, and B that so many of you all are familiar with, we're a nice starting place in terms of a suite of index values. Just as a reminder, with feedlot value, we're addressing that post-weaning performance on that terminal phase in terms of feedlot growth, performance efficiencies, as well as costs associated with that component. Grid value, looking at quality grade and red meat yield, and then dollar B, beef value, and a dollar per head difference. Just a snapshot of what's available on the website. We have a lot of people using these dollar values and have taken to them quite readily. A dollar B gets snapped off quite a bit in terms of using that dollar per head difference to rank or rate animals relative to other individuals or an average. The breakout pieces are available on the website as well, whether you want to just focus on dollar F, and we do have some industry segments that do that, or dollar G with the grid value. We have industry-relevant base values on a three-year rolling average to address the quality components and yield grade schedule. Also, if you're interested in a little bit more fine-tuning, you can look at that grid impact and break that out just in terms of quality grade or yield grade in dollars per head if you want to do some fine-tuning in your selection.
Sally, the exciting thing then becomes the next generation of these tools as we develop them and make them really customizable for you and your customers to really go after specific targets. And back in May, we activated what we're calling Dollar Value Interactive on the Dollar B suite of indexes that allows you to actually go in and make some specifications or changes to these basic assumptions. I mean, we might look at the choice select spread, which today we look at maybe in the $4-$4.50 range. A three-year rolling average would be about $10 if you look at that. We know last fall we saw some $30 market with the choice select spread. And so going in and having the ability to change that can also can help guide your customers in really identifying the genetics that that might meet the specific targets that they're looking at to produce towards. I think as Sally kind of indicated, we really look at this as a big sweeping change in a lot of the tools that we may put out there and really trying to get it into user-friendly units, dollars, and cents that people can understand, not only looking at, like she said, the output side of it, but also taking into account some of the discounts associated, some of the extra costs of production involved. And the next phase that we've really worked a lot on the last few months is the wean calf index that we're referring to as dollar W.
And we're pretty excited today to get to go ahead and share with you what's coming in terms of a spring 2005 release in this next evaluation. And with dollar W, wean calf index, it has four key impact areas that you'll start to think through as you begin to see and utilize dollar W. The first of those would be birth impact, and you could see how revenue would be translated back to that cow-calf operation in terms of reducing difficult birth, increasing that weaning calf crop percentage, and then that penciling out into cow revenue. There's also a component in there in terms of weaning direct, which will tie to your weaning weight EPD, and that has not only revenue but expense associated with it too. There's gain cost and maintenance cost associated with that calf gain and growth as well. There's a maternal milk using the milk EPD component, as well as some offshoots that we'll share with you. Also, in terms of cow size, we have the ability to use what we know about mature cow size and are continuing to refine that in terms of tying these pieces together simultaneously into a dollars per head impact piece. We'll also share with you, as we've learned through our research, some of the other components, we're able to generate a cow energy value in dollars per cow per year that we'll share with you too. Just to give you kind of a snapshot of how you will see this appear, we're used to seeing dollar F, G, and B come up on the internet, and there would be a weaned value in dollars per head presented as well. You'd be able to click on that hot link, and it will have some assumptions associated with it, not only in terms of base calf price, a slide associated with that, a cow-heifer mix, but also tying to a cow weight base, and then an energy cost associated with the cow herd. So there's those four impact areas that I want you to begin to think about and address, and that there will be EPD profiles associated with those and their impact illustrated as a general rule of thumb with those arrows. Another point as a take-home message, remember with indexes, you balance those strengths and weaknesses. So an animal may have the same dollar W as another animal, but they may not have exactly the same EPD profiles. So I think you'll enjoy that as well. One of the fun things that we found about the dollar W project is it's not just a complete package. We learned a lot from additional research endeavors as an offshoot of working with dollar W. And an interactive component definitely can come out of the optimal milk. In fact, we're developing an optimal milk module this fall that I think you'll find of interest. What it's kind of based off of is thinking about revenue or income related to milk EPD. And this is very cutting edge in terms of our beef industry, tying milk genetics to an economic twist. Again, using this language of economic merit associated with our genetics. When you look at this curve with a cow energy cost of about 5 cents per megacow, as that milk EPD increases, you have some additional rewards in terms of the revenue generated. But you have to recognize as this curve flattens out and even begins to decrease, you get into some risk associated with this as well. Because if that curve changes in terms of what those Cal energy costs are, then that risk profile and consideration also changes if those nutrient requirements can't be met. Another fun offshoot is that we had to do a little homework in terms of refining our mature cow evaluation for mature weight and mature height. And we're pleased to show that information to you. In terms of thinking ahead about turning in cow weights, say you collected some information on a yearling female, you turned in her yearling weight. Subsequently, you may have weighed her at 2 years, at 3 years, and at 7 and 8. And so how do we tie together those pieces? In the past, we haven't been able to use repeated measures. But now we're going to incorporate that genetic information, tie that together, use that repeated records data, and do that genetic prediction in a nonlinear form to project her mature weight at about 6 years of age, which is kind of a target where you'd want that between 5 to 7 years of age. Now, when you work with mature height, it's easier to establish that more back here at 2.5 to 3 years. Another take-home message, if you turn in cow weights right now, we really need a body condition score with those, or we can't use them. We're going to edit them out. If we don't have a body condition score at this weight, at 2, at 3, at 7, or 8, or wherever you turn those in. Tonight, through one of the workshops, we'll have an opportunity to do some body condition score workshop work. So keep this in mind for our upcoming evaluation. All right, I mentioned earlier the cow energy value component, and it would make sense that if you know about optimal milk and costs associated with that and cow size, then what's the energy cost of particular cow genetics? You might be familiar with the Red Angus maintenance EPD. And in terms of the maintenance EPD that Red Angus has, it addresses this cow size component as well as some costs associated with larger internal organs and some adjustments along those lines. But through our research with Dollar W, we recognize that you have energy costs associated with lactation. Excuse me. And so we wanted to incorporate into a cow maintenance energy component not only mature size, but also tie in lactation energy requirements as well, in more of a total energy package. We think it's very important to express this in terms of a savings impact in dollars per cow per year. And this would be a standalone value that can just be generated from what we've learned through the research from Dollar W.
Sally, I think the thing to point out here again is that this is kind of a different approach than what we've been used to looking at, strictly measuring outputs and even the value of outputs, but taking into consideration some efficiencies and how to build those into genetic selection. And so I think, again, it's something that we're really excited about, being able to take something like the cow maintenance energy terminology and really applying a little broader impact, including the lactation. I think it's going to make it a very useful tool for you all in genetic selection.
One final offshoot in terms of research information is we do get questions regarding heifer calving ease, and we have ongoing research that we're completing along those lines. And what these values would look like would be they'd be presented in terms of percentage, where the higher percentage UPDs are more favorable in terms of more probability of having those easy calving scores. And so there'd be a calving ease direct component where you're perhaps comparing sires mated to first calf heifers and looking at that percentage difference in that, again, increasing that easy calving. There's also a calving ease maternal component, and this is run in a multiple trait setting with birth weight as well, and well documented in the literature and science runs. With the maternal component, you're looking at future daughters and comparing that from, say, one bull to another, looking at that percentage, again, that higher EPD being more favorable.
Sally, I think, again, another thing to point out on this line, I mean, the Angus breed, I mean, we've recognized that maybe we don't really have big calving ease problems. And when we have the scientists go to analyze our data, they have to really take a second look at it because of the extreme nature of our data. When I say extreme, because of an extremely low percentage of unassisted births in our database. And so it is something, though, that we think there's some genetic variation there, without a doubt. And it's something that we think we need to address and put out there as a tool for those people that might want to use it as a selection tool. Again, with data collection, it's going to be extremely important to go through and, I mean, record calving ease scores on your first calf heifers and report that data thoroughly and accurately to where we can really build the database and enhance these tools in the future.
And even though we have extreme category data, and I think it's been fun for us to look at it as well, as opposed to the classical literature result in continental cattle, we could see how we could apply this to future index values as well. And that's, I think, where I want to go from this point, is you can see how this suite of indexes is evolving, and the tough one still remains to be done. And as we're working back through this system, these traits tend to be more lowly heritable, and we'd sure like to have some index components to pull together. We do have some initial research completed through some of our contacts in the industry and universities in terms of heifer pregnancy rate. There's other traits in terms of longevity, calving interval, gestation length that we'd like to look at as well. But I know I'm becoming a little repetitive depending on where we travel and which meeting that we do. But this thing and this point, I can assure you, up to this point where we've been developing these index values utilizing the EPDs that you're commonly comfortable with that we have readily available to us, we're able to generate these values on the registered animals and calculate those in interims and work through to get those index values. Now, one thing I can assure you, as we work through looking at, say, heifer pregnancy, genetic values, and the reproductive complex, if you are not turning in your breeding data collection info, if you're not turning in breeding data, I can assure you your box will be blank. I really need your help on this, and if you have any questions with us the next couple of days, we sure want to encourage you, because with lowly heritable traits, we want to have hundreds of thousands of records to work with. So we sure want to get those boxes filled in and continue our competitive edge. Bill?
Well, thanks, Sally. And again, it's exciting to look at the information that has been developed for registered Angus cattle and the tools that continually evolve for the seed stock producer. And at the same time, we still see the use and the need for evaluating data and creating value in the commercial sector as well. And I think that's been a strong emphasis of the board of directors to really address the commercial industry and try to provide services and programs that are going to further enhance their profitability in the industry. Beef Record Service, Angus Sourcer, a couple of those programs that we really think fit nicely with the tools that have been developed for you all as seed stock producers to go to the next generation of users. And the Beef Record Service, again, a very simple individual record system for commercial cattlemen. It was established back in the year 2000. It's something that we continue to work with and try to enhance and get producers involved in. It's individual animal records that allow the producer to evaluate performance data, performance records in his herd, look at it in SPAS type summaries that really evaluate production levels and how those levels compare to other benchmarks within the industry. And so it's something that I think, again, you can take out to your customers that might be kind of in that next level of really trying to do a better job, acquire more information for their herd, it's a good tool to present to them. Likewise, Angus Source, I think, is one of the exciting and a program that has really got a lot of diverse benefits, not only to the commercial producers using them, but to you all as producers and to the entire Angus breed, and identifying the ability to mark and identify those Angus-influenced cattle is really something that we think has tremendous benefit to the industry. We look at Angus Source as being kind of a combination of things. It's really a tagging and marketing program. It provides an opportunity to source genetic and process verification information for individual producers and the cattle that they produce, sired by registered Angus bulls that have been transferred into their name. From a marketing standpoint, it allows them to take that information and generate documents that can aid and assist in producing added value for the cattle that they're coming out of their herd. Again, we try to build this fairly broad, and I think we probably look at it initially in its development as really having a lot of value in terms of feeder cattle and trying to source cattle that could go into CAD, for example, and provide some flow of information back in those lines. But the replacement female side of it, I think, again, being able to tie the genetics to those cattle becomes very essential as well. We're trying to remain, as Neil kind of indicated, very flexible in terms of tag options, of participating in the program with either visual or an RFID tag, and we'll visit about that a little bit as well. These components of our tag right now, as you see on here, we're calling it a national ID number. We've kind of worked with this system, the AIN number that Neil was involved with back in the FAIR program, and have been assigning those numbers to cattle in our BRF program as well as cattle with Angus Source. This would be one of the programs Neil refers to as probably being kind of being grandfathered in, that cattle tagged with these numbers will be able to provide the information on those cattle and go back. But again, I think it's a program that we've developed, looking at our place all along as probably fitting in as one of those AIN allocators and providing to the industry, not only you all as registered members, but the some 100,000 commercial producers that use registered Angus bulls to provide that as a service as well, to provide them an opportunity to get these identification devices that might be used in a national ID program down the road. A little bit on the marketing side of Angus Source, again, you have the ability to create a marketing document, and as again, we talk about the value of data and the value of the information, and being able to look at the genetic components that are behind those cattle as well as the process information that went into those cattle as well, I think creates value. I mean, we've seen tremendous interest in feedlots and order buyers and starting to look at the EPD profiles, for example, and using the dollar value indexes on these marketing profiles to kind of give them some basis by which to create value out there in selecting cattle for their systems that they're going through. Again, we have really, I think, the other thing to point out as we look at programs like Angus Source, it's very diverse. I mean, again, as we talked about initially, the ability for this to help the producer who may have 23 calves to sell or the producer that may have 2,300 to sell, I think they can all derive some added value to these programs as well as the replacement females that we talked about as well. So again, we're really excited about the future and the things that we have been able to look at today and trying to determine the way to, again, keep in mind that our end goal is keeping that consumer eating more beef, keep changing that demand curve, and how we relate the genetics to that, as well as trying to create genetic profiles that are going to be profitable for all segments of the industry, I think is really exciting. Again, I think Dr. Purcell's comment, I think his take-home message, are we willing to change? And I think it's going to involve us being willing to look at new things, look at new tools, use new data to make these selections in the future that are really going to keep us with a competitive advantage that Sally talked about before. Well, we really have enjoyed the chance. I think we've got a few minutes. If anybody has some questions, you can tell Sally, I'll have to answer them.
Questions, comments?
Well, I think, Alan, it is something, again, we're going to have to evaluate. And, I mean, I think we've got some of that data out there now that we can look at. And, again, it's going in, and if you see that she's had embryo calves that have been reported or she's been used, she's probably going to be edited out of that data once that point comes in play. And that's one of the really challenging things when you look at this kind of data, because, I mean, quite honestly, in the past, there were some embryo transplant donors that become donors because they didn't get bred. Because they were open at the end of breeding season, they suddenly became a donor cow. And so I think some of those kind of nuisances, I guess, in the data are going to be something that we have to deal with as we get into those traits.
And you're right on track. That's where the number of records is going to become increasingly important. And if we look to the dairy industry and the work they're doing on indexing right now, and as they develop an additional trait analysis that may be a heritability of 10%, well, they'll add it to the index, granting that they'll have more power combining those because of some of the environmental constraints that we have to address on the edits. We're working in terms of using the milk EPD and the equations behind that, using the NRC equations for net energy into those as well as we give credit to the revenue component too.
Right. So it won't be
exactly. And so then you've got some trade-offs there that I think they're very important to account for. We also do some tweaks in terms of height and condition score to have a composition of weight, kind of what you're driving at. But yeah, the lactation energy adjustments make it more of a total energy picture instead of just cow size.
But you're decredited for getting this kind of information in this index. You really, really are, because we're still in the 1950s when we're talking about efficient cows and easy keepers and all that stuff. So I really commend you on getting this done.
Lowell? I think that's something that we look at, Lola's. Oh, that must have been a bad one. No, I think that's something we look at as, again, kind of the next phase. And as Sally said, kind of the optimal milk level. And, I mean, some of those things also are ways that we see as offshoots that can be customized features. But yeah, I think it's something that we looked at, and again, it's like we're selling $1.50 calves today versus $1.05 that's in the rolling average. And so I think, again, it's probably a lot like the dollar B suite of indexes that we see the need for a kind of a base or standard value, but then still having some interactive version as well.
Questions?
It's all yours, Chuck. Do we need to stay up here?